Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, June 1st, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, it was another typical Monday. You had to... What was that?
That was just...
loud noise, but maybe it was maybe it was those boys that are listening making that noise. But we have gold today just down a few. We have gold down just a few cents today at 1190.90. Although we had a high of 1205, so big swing there in the gold market today. It was up strong at the open, and of course just lost its gains throughout the day. Silver was the same thing, 1680. Currently had a high of 1724. Platinum was down 6 at 1108. Palladium was down 4 at 776. The USDX today up 0.57 at 97.45. Crude oil, not a lot of change, down 0.06 at 60.24. And the paper markets today, I know they're off their highs of the day. They were close to triple digits. Now we're looking up 29 on the Dow at 18,040. The NASDAQ up 12, 5,082. The S&P up 4 at 2111, 10-year yield. That moved up 0.10 for the 10-year yield at 2.19%. Euro is 109, up a little bit, and not a lot of action, either the foreign markets, the Asian or the European. So seems it's the same type of Monday we have.
Every Monday.
And
that means we could probably, just start doing five programs, Melody. Record them and just do the same one. Do the Tuesday program and the Wednesday program. We can do them all the same.
Well, now that wouldn't be fair to our listeners, now would it? They like
it. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Maybe
we can run a contest. Can you tell if we're live or a replay based on current events?
I can't tell.
Well, I'm going to tell you today the U.S. manufacturing growth accelerated in May for the first time in 6 months. And, of course, this is to be propelled by new more orders and an increase in hiring. The Institute for Supply Management said that the manufacturing index rose to 52.8 from the 51.5 in April. This is the highest reading since February. Any reading above 50 is to signal expansion. And it also suggests that perhaps the economy may be growing after shrinking for that first 3 months of bad weather for 2015. But, of course, we still continue to see the sharp rise in the dollar, which makes U.S. goods and more expensive overseas. And, of course, it'll drag down our exports. And so other than that, not too much going on. There's of course, the oil and gas industry, that has still been hammered with the lower oil prices. And so that hasn't helped. They've dropped buildings and equipment fell about 2.8% in the first quarter. And that was the biggest drop in more than 5 years for that industry. But you're beginning to see little signs that maybe businesses are picking up a little bit and buying equipment and so forth, machinery and so forth. But again, nothing, you know, to write home about. And certainly it's the type of report that we continue to get. We're not sure whether to believe it, how much it's been, you know, spun into these great numbers. And but those are the numbers that were reported today.
You know, you have a problem that is to some degree a function of the internet. We get new articles, you know, on a moment-by-moment basis. They're constantly pouring in. And it reminds me that back in the day, your information came to you in a newspaper or a magazine, and you didn't have a continuous flow of new information that was pounding in, pounding in, pounding in. The same way we do right now. We have, but Norman Mailer described it as the media goat, which means that he'll eat anything and just keep on chewing up tin cans and grass and, you know, garbage and whatever. He'll just eat anything. There is such a mass of information that sometimes it's difficult. You know, are we talking about something that is just the news for 15 minutes, or are we talking about something that's news that really means something in terms of weeks or months or years? And it's not something that's easy to get around, but nevertheless, it's the kind of question you sit back and, you know, the price, big deal, the price has moved, you know, a fraction of a percent here, there, or whatever.
That's the problem, Al. These numbers...
That means something, or is it just filler?
No, these numbers were to mean something. These were, you know, indications of what our economy was doing. But when you have our economy and the markets that are all based on the Federal Reserve, as far as the fundamentals for any type of growth or strength, yeah, it's difficult to find. And you still look to these numbers, and yes, they should mean something. Absolutely. And I don't think there's a, you know, people ask me all the time, and I mentioned this last week, well, who do you follow? Well, I don't follow anyone. I look at these numbers, I look at these reports, and I compare them to other reports. Bob Chapman, look how much, he didn't follow anybody's opinions and you know, and so forth. He read the news, he read the reports. You put these reports together, and it, like John Williams, he has important numbers that you follow. And you can read the numbers that are produced by, you know, the government and so forth, but then there's always the, you know, the truth behind them to which you can follow. So they should mean something now.
Well, they should mean something, but what I'm trying to get to, does it mean something? It's like watching a
film. I mean, I don't say them just to
be helpful. It's like watching
a thermometer.
I get that, but what I'm trying to get to is this. It's like watching a thermometer. Does it really matter if the temperature goes from 86 to 86.3? And then falls back to 86.2 and then drops down to 85.9. There's a point in time where the data keeps pouring in on a moment by moment basis, and you don't, it doesn't give you a perspective the same way if you got your information. What happened last week and how's that compared to today? All right? It gives you a little more of a trend. It gives you two dots that you can connect and you can derive something from. When you're connecting the dot between 5 minutes ago to 5 minutes from now, I'm not sure if that's, you know, it's one of the problems you have to deal with. People listening have to deal with it. We have to deal with it. It's a challenge to sort through all the information that's available and try to figure out what is just white noise and what actually has significance and meaningful application in each of our lives. That's what we do. So I'm observing the problem, and I'm not suggesting that we have a remedy for that problem, but I'm just observing what strikes me at least as a, you know, problem.
Well, key parts of the Patriot Act expired.
Yep.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it's a good thing. All in all, it's a good thing, but it's kind of amazing in some regards. Got an article from the New York Times, and that's the headline, Key Parts of Patriot Act Expire Temporarily as Senate Moves Toward Limits on Spying. The government's authority to sweep up vast quantities of phone records in the hunt for terrorists expired at 12:01 a.m. Monday after Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, blocked an extension of the program during an extraordinary and at times caustic Sunday session of the Senate. Well, first off, whatever role Rand Paul played in trying to stop the spying, my opinion, he's just gained 5 points on most of the other Republican candidates for president. I mean, the guy stuck his neck out. He's not going to win awards for it from his fellow congressman, but he's indicating a level of sincerity that, to me, that strikes me as impressive. I'm not here to recommend Rand Paul per se more than anyone else, but I have to admit, this, he stood up. He made a fight. He made a difference. It may be only a temporary difference, but still, he shows me something that I think is worthwhile. The article continues. It says, still, the Senate was signaled that it was ready to curtail the National Security Agency's bulk data collection program with likely passage this week of legislation that would shift the storage of telephone records from the government to the phone companies. I don't know. I listened to that, and what we're talking about, I think, is the same metadata that the government had been collecting on all of our phone calls will now be collected by the phone company. I don't know if it's half empty, half full of it. What is the, you know, this is the kind of news you look at. I don't know, you know. Still, something's been done. Paul forced a temporary expiration of parts of the post 9/11 Patriot Act. Paul at one point said, little by little, we've allowed our freedoms to slip away. I agree with him 100%. The expiration of surveillance authority demonstrates a profound shift in American attitudes since the days after September 11th, 2001. Terrorist attacks, when national security was preeminent in both parties. 14 years after that attack, even as American conflicts continue abroad, a swell of privacy concerns stemming from both the vast expansion of the communication system and an increasing distrust of government's use of data has turned those concerns on their head. I think that's an interesting observation, and I think they're right. There has been a profound shift in American attitudes. And it didn't happen just in the last week. It's been building for some time. People are concerned about big government. People are concerned about a growing police state. And what we see here, insofar as the Congress has been forced, essentially, to repudiate at least parts of the Patriot Act, we're seeing evidence of this shift in American attitude. And I think it's a good thing. I think it's a great thing. We don't need a bigger, better police state. We don't need Big Brother keeping an eye on us. Take your little spy apparatus and go spy on something else. Leave the American people alone. Where else? What else? The investigation. There's going to be, you know, this, whatever is being done, it's not all that dramatic. The government is going to be allowed to maintain investigations and collect data on anyone that they've been spying on prior to June 1st. All right? Even though they won't do everything from here on out, they can't collect the data on it. But if they've already been spying on particular individuals or whatever prior to today, then guess what? They get to continue. Senator Paul's effort clearly angered many of his Republican colleagues. Senator John McCain, Republican of Arizona, who sparred with Mr. Paul on the floor over procedure, said later that Mr. Paul was not fit for the White House job he seeks. According to McCain, I've said on many occasions that I believe he would be the worst candidate we could put forward. It's hard to believe. I think the worst candidate we could put forward is probably George W. Bush, and second would be John McCain. And after that, then there's Barack Obama. Maybe he's the worst one we could put forward. I don't see how you can point to a candidate and say, boy, this guy is unfit for office. After the people we've had in the presidency in recent years, and the people who've run for the presidency in recent years, this truly is a country where any little boy or girl can grow up to be president. And that includes some of us who are completely incompetent and unfit for the job. You can still be president. What the heck? Come on down. It's kind of like a hire the handicap thing at the White House. McCain denounced from the Senate what he called a campaign of demagoguery and disinformation about the Patriot Act's spying program. Well, maybe if Congress had read the Patriot Act before they voted for it, and maybe if Congress had made the Patriot Act available to the people to read and understand, support or reject before Congress voted for it, the Patriot Act might not have been shrouded in conspiracy theories from the start. For example, let's suppose that there was an honest investigation as to who was really responsible for the 9/11 attacks. We might have more faith in the government and be less prone to conspiracy theories. Right now, about one-third of the American people believe that the 9/11 attacks were an inside job performed by our own government rather than a bunch of ragtag Muslims. Now, whether that belief is true or false, I can't tell you for an absolute fact. I think it probably is true. But I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know what the truth of the matter is. But what is known is that the government doesn't appear to mind being accused of treason by one-third of the American people. Instead of conducting a thorough investigation to eliminate public concerns and public doubt as to who's responsible for 9/11, governments essentially said, screw the public. We're the almighty government. We don't have to explain anything. We haven't had, to this day, 14 years, we still haven't had a credible investigation as to what happened on 9/11. Government's refusal to address the concerns of one-third of the American people is deemed by many to be evidence that the government may, in fact, be guilty of 9/11. We didn't have a thorough investigation because the government didn't want a thorough investigation because it feared what it would expose to the public. So if Mr. McConnell and other members of the Congress are concerned about the Patriot Act being compromised by demagoguery and disinformation, maybe they should learn the lesson of not voting for bills that they haven't even read or made available to the public. And they should learn the lesson of thoroughly investigating American disasters rather than just supposing they can get away with any lie they want to feed the public. My point is, Mr. McConnell, he's concerned. Gee whiz. They're being beat by demagoguery and misinformation. Well, what do we get out here in TV land, radio land? If you're listening to Congress, where do you get a straight source of information? Where do you avoid the demagoguery? Any place? And how many of the people in Congress who complain about demagoguery, how many of them don't mind being a demagogue? They're going to sit back and say, oh, this other guy, that's demagoguery, that's bad. But when the guy who's complaining, he does the same thing, not a problem. I'm just saying that nobody in Congress, they are an improbable bunch to be criticizing others of misinformation or demagoguery. We're looking for the truth, and a little bit of luck and the grace of God, we may find it, but I don't think we'll get it through Congress. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. The program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
We have a little special here, gold and silver. We have 1-ounce silver rounds. These are the Buffalo Rounds 2015. And we're also going to have 1-ounce silver eagles. You get 20 of each, so that's a total of 40 silver coins, 1-ounce silver rounds, and 1-ounce American silver eagles, and a 1/10 ounce American gold eagle. And this includes all your shipping costs for $895. 1-ounce silver eagles, 20 of those. 1-ounce silver rounds, 20 of those. And your 1/10 ounce American gold eagle, $895. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com.
You know, we talked in the first segment, we're talking about Rand Paul trying to, doing what he could to interfere with reenactment of the Patriot Acts. And I raised the point that You know, if the government was concerned, Mitch McConnell, he's complaining that the Patriot Act has been at least compromised by demagoguery and misinformation. Well, one of the things that government, if they ever wanted to really stop that, again, like I was saying, they had to be, first, Congress should not be voting for bills they haven't read. That's point one. And point two, the bills, whatever the content of the bills are, should not only be made available to the Congress, they should be made available to the public where we can see and react and say, look, I like it or I can't stand it. Well, you know, and we can begin to put pressure on our congressmen, senators, and so on. Trade bill is another one, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Here's an article from the New York Times that illustrates this same point. Headline is Obama's trade deal faces bipartisan peril in the House. It's like, I don't know, something in the Haunted House, one of the movies from back when I was a kid. Who don't go, you go to the West Wing and I'll go in the East Wing and we'll see if we can find what's going on. Peril in the House. Well, the bruising battle over President Obama's push for power to negotiate two potentially far-reaching trade pacts will shift this week to the House, where the White House faces entrenched opposition from Democrats and the stirring of rebellion from the Republicans' right flank. On the one hand, I am just a little bit shocked and amazed. The Democrats are doing something I approve of. I didn't think I was going to live long enough to see that happen, and here it is. And there is at least rebellion on the Republicans' right flank where they might not support this either. And we've told people, we've talked about this in the last couple of weeks, passed out a phone number you can call at Congress and in the Senate, call your congressman, call your senator, send them faxes, send them email, tell them no, no, and no on this Trans-Pacific trade deal. It will not help us any more than the NAFTA did, all right? Which just, here part of the article I'm reading here, most congressional Democrats are skeptical that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is going to do us any good. They argue that since the North American Free Trade Agreement was approved in 1993, such accords have only hastened the flow of manufacturing jobs overseas and pressured wages downward through international competition, which is exactly what we've been talking about in this program for years. Corporations, their executives, and shareholders have prospered, but globalization has helped hollow out the American middle class, right? According to many Democrats. I agree with them 100%. They're right. By contrast, most Republicans conceptually side with President Obama, complaining that the forces of globalization are inevitable and the trade deals like the Trans-Pacific Partnership will help open foreign markets to American goods and services. That's a lie. Oh, it might open foreign markets to goods and services that are made by corporations that were once upon a time American but are now currently located overseas, take advantage of cheap labor. But what gets me about this, the Republicans side with Obama, contending that the forces of globalization are inevitable. But is globalization really inevitable? And even if that's true, what about the Constitution? Will it inevitably succumb to the forces of globalization? Seeing this inevitability, has Congress decided to abandon the Constitution? Where does Congress find the authority in the Constitution to abandon the Constitution? To what extent does support of globalist treaties like the Trans-Pacific Partnership constitute treason against the people of the United States of America? What about President Obama, who allows and encourages illegal aliens to come into this country? Where is his power to do that? He's here to enforce the laws that are made by Congress. He's not here to sit back and say, well, I'm not going to enforce those laws because that's contrary to my policy. He is there. It is his job. If you hire me as a window washer and I show up and say, well, I'm not going to wash windows because I don't think these windows need to be. Look, the job you're hired to do is wash the windows. If the job you're hired to do is be chief executive of the United States, government of the United States, then your principal job is not to rule this country like a little dictator or some sort of a king. It is your job to go ahead and enforce the laws, right or wrong. Enforce them. That's your job. You don't get to make the call on whether it's right or wrong. That call is made by the judicial department. If somebody's got a complaint, they say this is a bad law, it violates the Constitution, it does this, that, or the other. All right, take it to court and let the judges decide. That is their job. It's not up to the executive to pick and choose, and he's not empowered to pick and choose. And he's certainly not empowered by anything in the Constitution to break existing law. And yet that's what we have. I don't know. So is globalization inevitable? I don't think it is. But even if globalization is an idea whose time has come, if that globalization is absolutely necessary and inevitable, it means that everyone's standard of living in this country is going to be significantly reduced. Inevitably, if we're competing with people who will work for $100 a week or less, right? Third world labor, dirt cheap. It's great for the corporations. They can produce their products with minimum cost of labor, and then they can sell it for maximum profit into countries like the United States that still have some money. But how long are we going to have any money if our jobs are shipped overseas? You know, the whole idea that this is going to help this country is just it's nutty. And we had Mr. McConnell complaining that the Patriot Act was stopped by demagoguery and disinformation. Well, I guarantee you there's little more than demagoguery and misinformation to support the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And they have managed to keep the terms of that massive agreement largely secret from the American people. Now, what are we supposed to do is sit back and say, well, boy, that inspires my confidence. I know that whenever the government has a program that they won't tell me what's in it, I know they're working for my best interests. And that's why they won't tell me, because I just get happy feet and I'd be dancing around the building because, yay, yippee, the government is protecting me once again. And I know it because they won't tell me what they're up to. Well, that's obviously nuts. When the government won't reveal what's going on in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, insofar as they won't make it available to the public to see, study, understand, the government is telling us they are up to something that they know very well, that if you people have a chance to look at and understand, you're going to riot. They don't want you meddling with government power and control. They think they're so smart that they can do what's best for major corporations. They'll do well, global free trade, multinational corporations. But those of you that have jobs, had an American dream here in the United States of America, you can kiss that goodbye because you're going to be competing head-on with China and India and Bangladesh and every other third world country, because without tariffs to protect us, your wages are going down and headed in the direction of the wages of those third world nations. Now, at the same time, those third world nations, their wages are probably going up. Global free trade is probably a good idea for the third world, but it's not at all helpful for the people in the United States of America, and more than likely Europe, maybe Australia, no? Japan. You can open everything up, let everybody, it's bad business for us. And I've said for a long time, I do not understand, if I were running a corporation and I manufacture widgets, the government says I've got to work to sell my widgets to Peking, all right? Or maybe New Delhi. And I'm looking back and I'm saying, why is that? Why couldn't I just sell my widgets into South Dakota or Maine or Georgia? Isn't that enough of a market? Why do we even have to have international trade. I don't mean, I'm not sitting here and saying there shouldn't be any. It's not my point. But we have people who advocate it as if it is the central and most important reality of our economic system. Oh my gosh, we're not trading with foreign countries enough. So what? Why don't we just trade amongst ourselves? This is probably the strongest market in the world. And if we kept our tariff barriers up, we can keep this market for ourselves. Build our own TVs, build our own computers, build our own cars. We wouldn't have as many homeless. We wouldn't have as many people on welfare. We wouldn't see the American dream dissolving and on the verge of disappearing. We might even be able to trust our Congress, our Senate, and our President. There'd be a lot of good that could come from this. But instead, people who believe in the New World Order and globalization, they're simply saying, well, we'll sacrifice the American people. We'll sacrifice the American economy to take care of the rest of the economies in the world. And I don't agree with that. I mean, that's what they appear. I haven't heard them say that per se, but that's what their conduct indicates. They want the New World Order. They want globalization. And in order to get it, they have to sacrifice the United States of America. Right? They may even have to disintegrate it. There's only one country right now. It might be a little bit of an exaggeration to say that there's only one country. But it's pretty close to true to say that there's only one country in this world that poses a meaningful threat to what may become the New World Order and global free trade. And that's the United States of America. We don't need global free trade. We don't need the New World Order, and we have sufficient resources, military if necessary, to stop the New World Order. From the perspective of the New World Order and global free trade, it would probably be a good idea to see the United States disintegrate the way the former Soviet Union did back in 1991. Huh? They could take us down and divide the United States into 5 or 10 regions. Those regions would be individually less able to resist the forces of the New World Order than the entire United States is when it functions as a single entity. It's a conspiracy theory that I can't back up with anything other than suspicions. I don't have facts to support what I'm saying, but for me, it seems at least plausible. The people in positions of power want the United States destroyed. And insofar as they succeed in that objective, insofar as that objective is not just, you know, a bizarre idea of my own mind, if it's true, if it's an accurate idea, insofar as they succeed, everybody listening to this program, Melody and myself, we will all be diminished. Our standards of living will be diminished, except for a top 1%, maybe a tenth of a percent. They'll get fabulously wealthy, where the rest of us will be driven down. The middle class will become, at best, lower middle class. So in any case, it's interesting to me to see that there's resistance in the Democrat Party. It's surprising that Republicans are working with the president. Democrats are working against the president. Here I am agreeing with the Democrats. You know, who'd have thunk it? What do you think, Melody? Is Trans-Pacific Partnership good, bad, indifferent, going to help us, hurt us, what?
Well, we had mentioned earlier, we talked through the break about Rand Paul. You know, here he is fighting against the Patriot Act, but yet, he wants this trade agreement. He wants the TPP. He wants the European Trade Agreement, the TIPP. And, he's pushing for Obama to complete this agreement with this trade agreement. He says we need it for to revive the sluggish economic growth. We need it for our economy. And it's just I disagree also, but I mean, it's here you have, someone that's a libertarian that is, fights for your rights on one hand and gives them away on the other. And it comes confusing to a lot of people as far as, you know, where are these guys really coming from? And so,
you know, what's wrong with the libertarians? And I've run for public office as a libertarian. I ran for the Supreme Court of the state of Texas in 1992 as a libertarian. What's wrong with the Libertarian Party is they don't see any foundation for the law and God's law. Their notions on the law are all based on reason, and I have no objection to that. But they take their reason, and they will do things like support global free trade, even though it's contrary to the best interests of the people in this country. I don't think anyone can really make a credible argument that global free trade is going to help the average American for the next any time in the next 20 years. We're going to pay a serious price if we go into it. But logically, sure, logically, global free trade makes a great deal of logical sense, unless you're on the side that's going to lose everything by embracing the
concept. And Paul is a Republican, but he does have the libertarian views.
Yes. Well, I don't know what Paul's views on this, but I'm just speaking of libertarian. You can carry logic to an extreme where it might be great for the world, but it's not worth anything for you. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Hey, we got four more days until Greece has to pay their billion-dollar debt.
Yeah, I understand. And that's just the beginning of it. I mean, they couldn't pay $750 million just a couple of weeks ago, and now they're in for $1 billion or $1.5 billion, which is twice as much. They won't be able to pay that either. Here's an article from Ms. Shedlock. It says, the headline is Tsipras, that's the Greek prime minister, accuses Troika of creditor monstrosity, urges Eurozone leaders to read For Whom the Bell Tolls. What's that mean? It means that the Greek... It means that all of this wrangling has finally reached a point where the Greek prime minister has lost it. You understand? And I don't mean that he's necessarily wrong. That's not what I mean. He has just lost his inclination and ability to deal with his situation in a civil manner. He feels like he's dealing with crazy people, right? And mental illness is contagious, and he's getting a dose of it. Now, the article says it appears the Eurozone is one step closer to an accident today. In a Le Monde editorial, defiant Tsipras threatens to detonate European crisis rather than yield to creditor monstrosity. What that means is they're not playing nice, right? If the negotiations have some sort of a chance of succeeding, everybody's going to play nice. Even if they can't stand each other, they're going to shake each other's hand and smile. They're going to do their little dance. But when one side starts accusing the other side of behaving in a way that's monstrous, right, that's a pretty good indication that things are not going as well as a lot of people would hope. Greek Premier Alexis Tsipras has accused Europe's creditor powers of issuing absurd demands and came close to warning that the far-left government will detonate a pan-European political and strategic crisis if pushed any further. Writing for Le Monde in a tone of furious defiance after the latest set of talks reached an impasse, Mr. Tsipras said the Eurozone's dominant players were by degrees bringing about the complete abolition of democracy in Europe. I don't know. Is that an exaggerated claim or is it true, Melody? It sounds that my first reaction to it was a silly claim. Come close to destroying democracy in Europe. But, you know, the European Union is being run in a way where once it's really well established, some people in positions of power who are not subject to being elected, not subject to political input from the people of Europe, are going to simply order Europe around. And to some extent, Tsipras may be right. They may be trying to get rid of democracy. And he goes on, complains that these people in power were ushering in a technocratic monstrosity with powers to subjugate states that refuse to accept the doctrines of extreme neoliberalism. Which is, and what are the doctrines of extreme neoliberalism, Melody? They are, you got to pay your bills. Greece says, what kind of crazy talk is that? These people are monsters. They were trying to get us to pay our bills. And they know, and there is certain level of monstrosity, because the Greeks are not entirely guilty, and the creditors are not entirely innocent. They loaned money the same way some people give booze or crack to addicts. They're called enablers, all right? And you can say what you want. The guy's addicted to crack. That's a bad thing. He's addicted to alcohol. It's a bad thing. But when other people are here, let me get you a fifth of scotch. Here, let me buy you a couple of rocks of crack. They're not helping you. And the people who loaned all this money to Greece in the first place were not truly helping Greece. And they should have known that. Was Greece foolish to borrow all this money? Yeah, probably. Were the lenders foolish to lend Greece all this money? Yeah, probably. Nobody's innocent on this thing. And we reach a point where both sides need to recognize, no matter what they do, say, think, the Greeks aren't going to pay the bill. It can't be paid. It won't be paid. All right? And the creditors don't want to deal with that. And they don't want to accept responsibility for lending more money than they should have to people who really didn't. You know, it was like a liar's loan that they handed out to a bunch of people in the late 1990s and early 2000s in this country They had what came to be called liar's loans, where you could walk into the bank and they say, how much do you earn? So, oh, I make $250,000 a year. Okay, if you say so, I just fill in the form, sign here. Okay, and they issued the loan, when in fact you might be making $25,000 or $50,000 a year. The banks would take the accepted the lies. And to some degree, the creditors in Europe, or the creditors that have loaned money to Greece, they accepted the lies. They are complicit in the liar loans. It's not just the guy who lied and said, I make $250,000 a year when actually he only makes 50. Is he a liar? Yeah. But what about the people who knew very well, this guy's lying? I'd see by the car he drove in, and I can see the way he's driving. He doesn't make a dime over $50,000 a year, and he claims $250,000. But don't matter. We'll take it anyway. That's policy. Point I'm making is that the lenders are every bit as complicit in the problem in Greece as are the borrowers. And somewhere along the line, someone's got to just deal with it and said, look, you made a bad loan. You were stupid. Now you have to pay the price for that. And the creditors say, no, we don't. We don't want to pay the price for our stupidity. We only want the Greeks to pay for their stupidity, but we don't want to pay for our stupidity. And so the problem continues. Tsipras says for those countries that refuse to bow to the new authority, the solution will be simple, harsh punishment. It appears that the new European power is being constructed with Greece being the first victim, he said. And he says, if some, however, think or want to believe that the decision concerns only Greece, they're making a grave mistake. I would suggest that they reread Hemingway's masterpiece, For Whom the Bell Tolls. The bell tolls for thee. You're all in this. We're in a world, and not just Greece, not just the creditors of Greece, all of us are in this to some extent, where we are constantly being told what we're entitled to, but almost never reminded of what our responsibilities are. You have a responsibility to figure out if someone comes up and offers to loan you a bunch of money, or give you a free lunch, or, you know, you can fill in the blank. They make these offers. You can't just behave like a child all your life and take anything that looks good. Somewhere along the line, you have to recognize the adverse consequence that flow from failing to accept responsibility for your own life. Then you want to blame someone else. The creditors in Europe want to blame the Greeks. The Greeks want to blame the creditors. They're both responsible. But we do the same thing in this country. We're all looking for somebody we can blame for our problems, but we don't want to take responsibility for our problems. If I had to make and I'm only guessing here, but it crosses my mind that what this country needs is a way to encourage people to once again become responsible. Take personal responsibility for your life. Take personal responsibility for your lunch. As nutty as it seems, and it's so hard to pass up, but if somebody comes up and offers you a free lunch, tell them to go to H. I don't want your free lunch. You understand? I want to function on the basis of my own personal responsibility. And you have to do that because, in my opinion, part of the reason you have to do that is because there's going to be a day when the free lunches are going to disappear, as will the entitlements and subsidies and so on. And those of us who have spent the last 1, 2, 5 years living irresponsibly, without accepting responsibility for our own lives, you can all of a sudden find yourself in deep trouble. When the entitlements, the welfare, the subsidies, the free lunches, when they disappear, and they will, they're going to have to. How are you going to support yourself if you don't remember what it means to be personally responsible? How are you going to find a job? And I don't mean it's going to be easy. I'm not trying to tell you that, take personal responsibility and life will be, it will turn into something golden for you. But I am suggesting that if you don't cultivate that idea of personal responsibility, if you don't embrace it and even come to enjoy it, you're headed for trouble that could be lethal. You know, if personal responsibility means that you live in a hut, you live in a hut. And if that's all you can afford, then that's all you get. You have to be extraordinarily wary of taking all these free, you know, entitlements and subsidies that the government hands out. It makes you dependent. You lose any sense of independence, you're going to lose that sense of personal confidence and competency where you think, I can make it no matter what. You get that when you become responsible. You walk away from that responsibility and say, well, I'm going to let somebody else support me. You are a dependent. You might still live a good life, as long as your whoever the source of your income doesn't go broke. You know, you can see a lot of people get away with being a dependent for their whole lives and it'll be fine. But I don't think most will. I think most dependents will ultimately face a moment when they realize, oh my gosh, I got nobody to turn to. And if you can't even count on yourself, big trouble. Yeah. So in any case, Tsipras is over there in the complaining that his creditors are behaving in a monstrous manner, which is probably true. Creditors are complaining that the Greeks are behaving in an irresponsible manner, and that's undoubtedly true. What do you do with it? You know, there's some things where you just learn your lesson and move on. You get the divorce, that's it. Goodbye. I made a big mistake. You go your way, I go my way. Yeah. And you just take responsibility and go on and say, okay, I made a mistake, I learned from it. Let's see if I can not make that same mistake another time. That make any sense, Melody?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're almost out of time, and I do think, I don't know if we still have them online, we have Jim from West Virginia. Are you still there, Jim?
Yes. I just have a real short comment. Every point you've made is extremely well taken. But it has been 50 years ago in May that my dad told me about the private Federal Reserve counterfeiting operation. It never ceased to amaze him that they bought the United States with bogus bucks. If the Greek head of the Greek government sat there and he said, listen, there's no basis for paying back money to counterfeiters, much less interest on it. He said that publicly. It would wake up the whole European continent and the whole entire scam would go, Euro scam would go down. But I truly, honestly believe that the Greek government was talked into putting too many people into the wealth manipulation, welfare roles, whether it was government jobs or government dole or retirement programs. Yes, this is true. And they were talked into it because the goal was to destroy every nation on earth for the one world government. But yes, the Greeks fell into the trap. They marched into slavery, debt slavery, but the debt is totally bogus. And once again, how any operation engaged in the sale and manufacture of counterfeit currency can possibly go broke and run on the banks is beyond my comprehension. But if they would come out and simply say, European central banks are mostly counterfeiters and people are stupid enough to invest in it, oh, well, invest in a counterfeiting operation. So there are dirty hands on both sides of it. It's like an unholy conspiracy of sorts between.
Exactly. It's like the old saying, you can't con an honest man. If you were conned, you got to figure, what did I do? Where did I go where I thought I could get a free lunch? That's what it comes down to. You can't con an honest man. Greece wasn't honest. The creditors weren't honest. I'm going to be honest right now and tell everybody we're out of time. Thank you for your call, Jim. We'll be back tomorrow. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still there. there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's you, Sam.